In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
For a long, long time, there was just one destination. If you were an ambitious tech innovator and eager to change the world, America. Silicon Valley in California was your first choice, probably. But New York's Silicon Alley was right there, too. Washington State, Chicago, Massachusetts, all of them home to the industry's biggest companies and cutting-edge facilities. And they still are home to those companies and facilities. But that might no longer be enough.
Okay, I'm going back to my Google search. Who here is new to Canada? You have a show of hands. Unbelievable. Who here has been newer to Canada than less than 3 months? Can anyone beat 3 months?
It was originally a casual prediction, made around the time of Donald Trump's first travel ban in 2017.
So we have a travel ban. It's a very powerful ban. We're adding a couple of countries to it. We have to be safe. Our country has to be safe.
Would usurp American ones as the place of choice for up-and-coming tech talent. Now, 3 years later, the results are coming in, and both Toronto and Vancouver are rapidly climbing the charts. And now, depending on what happens down south in November, this shift might turn out to be much more than a temporary blip. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Joel Rose is a correspondent based in Washington, D.C. with NPR. He covers, among other things, immigration. Hey, Joel.
Hey, Jordan. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, especially because Canada is beating the U.S. at something right now.
That was sort of my editor's headline, but yeah. Canada's winning. Canada is winning.
We'll take it where we can find it. Why don't you start, before we get into the whole story, just tell me a little bit about Jason Goldlist, who's one of the characters in your piece. Who is he, and why does he sound like a game show host?
So Jason Goldlist was the MC of this event that I attended in Toronto a couple weeks ago.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome. The first Tech TO of the decade. Woo! Here we go.
Hosted by this organization called Tech Toronto. And Jason is the co-founder. And they do several of these events a month where folks in the tech industry kind of get together. They watch presentations from their successful peers up on the podium, kind of like little TED Talks or what have you. And they schmooze. There's a lot of schmoozing. There's pizza. There's beer. And I wanted to be there because this is also an entry point for people who are new in town, trying to learn their way around the tech scene in Toronto. And I wanted to find people, you know, who had just arrived. And sure enough, dozens of people at this event had just arrived. One of the questions that Jason asks at most of these events is, who here is new in Canada?
Is new to Canada? We have a show of hands. Unbelievable.
And at the event I saw, there were dozens of hands in the air. All over this auditorium. And I should say there were like hundreds of people in the auditorium, probably like 500. And not all of them were new in town, but a big chunk were. And if you think about it, they're doing like 3-4 events like this every month. And I think you'd get a similar percentage of new Canadians at every one of these events. And just sort of an illustration of how many people are coming into this tech scene from around the world all the time. And that's why I wanted to be there, just to talk to some of these people who had just moved to Canada, you know, and get some of their stories. Some of them had moved directly to Canada. Others had come from the U.S. and had left for one reason or another and moved north. Others were coming from outside of North America and were landing for the first time in Canada. Yeah.
Can you put into context a little bit what is going on with the tech scene in Toronto right now? And I guess in Vancouver, too. It's one thing to sort of anecdotally look at these events, but what kind of numbers do we have?
By some measures, Toronto's tech scene is actually growing faster than any other city in North America, including San Francisco, including Seattle, including New York, like these big, you know, cities in the U.S. that have been magnets for tech workers for, you know, forever. And, you know, by some measure, Toronto has eclipsed them. And Vancouver is not that far behind. Vancouver is also cracked sort of the top five in terms of the fastest growing tech scenes in North America. So they're clearly doing something to attract all these workers and add all these jobs. And so that's what's going on. I think it's worth pointing out, in terms of total tech jobs, they probably still have a ways to go to catch up to these big U.S. cities that I've just named, but they're making up the ground pretty fast.
When you talk to people in the industry for this piece, how unusual is that to see two Canadian cities jump ahead of some of the U.S. cities that I would certainly associate with tech industry more than Toronto or Vancouver?
I think it's a pretty big change. When I first wrote about the Canadian tech industry a couple years ago, after President Trump took office, people told me that Canada kind of used to be known for brain drain, that the country produced really good engineers and software developers and then basically watched them leave.
Yeah, that's been a long-standing issue in Canada.
So this is a big change in that sense, right? Canada is now keeping more of those brains in jobs, and it's also now importing tech talent from other countries, including from the U.S. and also outside of North America, people who previously would have, been flocking directly to the Bay Area and Seattle and this, the usual suspects, are now taking a harder look at other markets, and the Canadian cities seem to be benefiting from that.
Can you give me an example of maybe just one of the people you talked to in Toronto and kind of what their story is and how they ended up in Canada?
Sure. I talked to several people who had trained or worked in the U.S. and then just decided for one reason or another that Canada was where the future was for them. I guess one person I would talk about is Uzga Yoluk.
So when I was on my last year of my PhD, I wanted to go abroad and gain more experience.
She is a computational biologist, originally from Turkey, and had done her advanced studies in Europe and then in Baltimore, Maryland, in the U.S. And she told me she did not even really seriously apply for jobs in the U.S.
When I was applying for the States, I was already informed by several coaches and several friends that getting a visa in U.S. is not easy.
Like, she was well educated on it. She knew how difficult it was, that you have to find an employer who really wants you, who's willing to sponsor you for the visa. And then you are really tightly bound to that employer because your visa is bound to that employer. And if you want to change jobs, it's a real complicated situation. And even just in the first place, getting the approval to work for that employer who wants you, right? You've already got essentially the job offer. But then there's a great deal of like lawyering and paperwork that you have to go through to get the approval. There's a visa lottery. You may not even get it. It's extremely complicated and time-consuming and expensive. And she said, you know what? I don't need it.
It becomes a full-time job just to understand and learn the process of the visa applications.
I'm just not going to try that hard to find a job in the U.S. I'm going to look in Canada. And she found a company in Toronto working in computational biology. She went up. She checked out the city. She liked it. She got the offer. The work permit came through in weeks. As soon as she had all her paperwork in order from Europe and everywhere else that she'd lived. And then she, started the job just a couple weeks ago at this company called Protein Cure. And it would have been, if she'd tried to move to Chicago, if she'd tried to move to, where the big pharma companies are in the States, in New Jersey or California, Boston. I mean, the jobs are there, but it just would have been much more difficult for her personally and much more expensive. And she just said, you know what? Toronto's great. I've got a job there. I like this company. And there she is. She's working.
Well, given that, and that the immigration policies that you cover play such a big role in some of these decisions, is this really something that Toronto or Vancouver are doing right? Or is it more just benefiting from something America's doing wrong right now? Or maybe not even wrong, but something that has fundamentally changed?
I think the answer to that is both. Like, I think the immigration system in the U.S. was never particularly user-friendly, even before the Trump administration came to power, right? But the reality is now that it's gotten even harder for tech workers to get visas. The denial rate for new H-1B visas is way up in the past couple of years. It used to be like more than 90% got approved. Now the approval rate is down to almost just about 75%, which, is still a lot, but it's a difference, right? And I think tech workers see that difference. Tech companies see that difference. And it's made everybody a little bit more reluctant to go through this process because there's more uncertainty. It was always long, it was always slow and expensive, but you kind of knew at the end of the day you'd get your visa for your worker and they'd work for you. And now there's more uncertainty in people's minds. And I think that really is pushing some tech workers away. Not just the policy itself, right? But the perception. That's causing people to look elsewhere. And when they look at Canada, I think they see that the country is doing the exact opposite, right? The country is making it easier for these high-skilled workers to come in and start working quickly. And they notice, you know, the new Canadians that I talk to like how quickly they can get in, that they can get this work permit in some cases in just a few weeks, compared to whatever it is, months or years, probably months, but whatever, a long period of time they'd have to wait in the U.S. And another thing they talk about is how quickly they can get permanent residency in Canada. In the U.S., that can take years and years to get a green card, as we call it. And the exact wait time sort of depends on what country you're coming from. For people from India and China in particular, where a lot of people are coming, there's a really long line. And the wait times can be measured actually in decades in some cases. So compare that to Canada, you get a passport in under 5 years. You know, so that kind of certainty seems very attractive to people who want to put down roots, want to have a family. Hard to do that when you don't really know what the immigration process is going to be for you a few years down the road. And if it's ever going to lead to you having a passport in your new country, that's very something people are thinking about when they make these decisions. They're not just thinking about, you know, this job or, you know, even the second job. They're really moving their whole lives to North America, and they want to know, like, what is going to happen to my family and where are we going to be in 5 or 10 years? And Canada offers a much more predictable path if you're looking out that far.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
How do American companies feel about this? Because you mentioned earlier that the jobs are still there in the States. People are just choosing elsewhere because it's easier. But these guys are used to being the top choice for tech workers, right?
They are. And I think, you know, to be totally fair, I think they still are in a lot of cases, right? I mean, the Bay Area still has the cachet, it has the venture capital, it has all of that. Seattle and New York, like, people still want to work in these places, but the H-1B visas in this country are capped at 85,000 a year.
Yeah.
There are many, many more applicants than that number of visas, right? There's a lottery. The slots fill up really fast. So I don't want to, like, overstate the impact on U.S. businesses. But at the same time, there's a huge demand for tech workers in the U.S. And if you talk to the business, to the people who are trying to do hiring at startups and at companies that are trying to scale up, they are like, where are the workers? Show me the workers. I will go where they are. I just can't find enough.
Right. Well, you attended a meeting dealing with this very thing. Tell me about that.
It was at a very nice restaurant in New York City. It's called Del Posto. It's sort of a wine cellar vibe. You know, so it's a basement room, and I think about a dozen, 15 hiring managers from different startups and tech companies in New York had come to this dinner, and it was being thrown by a company called Mob Squad.
I had Mob Squad every week, and there's about 30,000 open software engineering roles in San Francisco alone right now today. There's over a couple hundred thousand in the U.S.
So the founder of this company is a guy named Irfan Raji, and he's a longtime tech industry guy, works in venture capital. So Mob Squad is his company, and their offering is a little complicated. I'll try to boil it down. Basically, they are saying, if you can't get your tech worker a visa in the U.S. or their visa expires or whatever, do the next best thing. Have them work for you remotely from Canada. And we'll set them up in an office. They'll still work for you. They'll still be the team member you know and love. They'll just be in Halifax or in Calgary,
right,
or, you know, somewhere a several-hour flight away. And you can have the best of both worlds, right? You can have them in North America. They don't have to go back to India or China where you've got a huge time difference and IP problems and all sorts of other issues. They'll come to Canada. We'll set them up. They'll work for you.
If you'd rather fill a job than go without, work with us. We'll open a virtual subsidiary for you in Canada. You get access to the world.
This is targeting the small company, right? They can't afford to just go sign a lease in Toronto or Vancouver and hire 50, 100 engineers the way the big boys can, mm-hmm. right? The way that like the Facebooks and Googles, whatever. They are opening Canadian operations in some cases, but they don't need the help of this company, Mob Squad. The value proposition that Mob Squad is offering is really for like a small company that has one or two employees that they want to keep or want to hire, and U.S. immigration law is somehow in the way of that. Here's a way you can still have them work for you in North America, just, you know, north of the border.
So does that mean a lot of the tech workers that Canada is, well, I guess that we are kind of bragging about, are actually working for American companies? And so it's not necessarily a burgeoning Canadian tech company industry, just home to more jobs.
That's a really good question. And I have not cracked the numbers on that. So I don't want to opine from on high. But my sense is it's both, right? It's like U.S. companies are coming into the market chasing the tech talent that they need and that they swear up and down they cannot find in the U.S. And here's an opportunity to hire great engineers and get them working for you quickly from around the world or from Canada. I don't think that's the only thing that's happening here. I mean, I think clearly there's a lot of startup activity in Toronto and Vancouver and there's a lot going on. There was a lot going on before the Trump administration came in and tightened the screws on U.S. immigration policy, right? This is not something that just happened in the last couple of years. I think what's new about it may be that the U.S. companies are taking note, right? That they're saying, oh, wait, there really is a concentration of talent up there that I can get access to, and they need these engineers and developers with the talent to make the products that they need to bring to market. So they'll go where that talent is.
What's the ultimate impact on the tech industry in the two countries if this trend doesn't change? I know you mentioned that, you know, the Bay Area and other places are still probably well ahead in terms of total workers. But does this gap in terms of new workers continue to widen?
Look, the U.S. industry is so big and so well capitalized, and you know, like all the other things that I've already mentioned, like in San Francisco and Seattle and New York, like I don't think that advantage disappears. What the people I interviewed for this story would say is that the tech worker who wants to go and start out on their own, start a new company, that person may be looking a lot harder at Toronto or Vancouver now than they ever did before. You know, is Silicon Valley going to someday be supplanted? I don't think we can say that right now, but you know, this has unintended consequences, right? If you have an immigration policy that makes more startup workers think about starting somewhere else, like they will. And who knows where that goes.
Well, my last question was going to be about the upcoming election. And I won't ask you about what happens if someone else wins, because we obviously don't even know who's going to be running against Trump. But does the Trump administration, assuming they remain in power, do they understand that this is becoming an issue that U.S. tech companies are maybe not happy about? And have they talked about making it any easier, at least for specific individuals, to get jobs in the States?
They do talk about this issue, and they do sound sympathetic to the industry when they talk about it. So, for instance, President Trump gave an interview a couple of weeks ago to a host on the Fox News channel.
I hear that your team is planning on advocating more foreign workers coming in for some of these high-tech companies.
So
I'm very concerned about that,
I know
a lot of your supporters.
And so is...
And they actually got into a pretty contentious discussion about this question, where the host was sort of pushing President Trump, saying, well, you promised to protect American workers. How are you protecting American workers here? And President Trump said, well, I'm protecting American, essentially, I'm protecting American companies, right? They need to be competitive. They need to be able to hire the best talent from around the world. And once people have gone to our universities, they need to be able to keep them here in the States. So, now I think the president certainly was articulating the position that Silicon Valley would take on this, right? That we need to be able to capture the best talent and not be scaring it away. The tricky thing is that immigrants themselves, tech workers themselves, are not getting that message from the policies. And, you know, like the Turkish woman I mentioned earlier, I read the president's remarks to her, and she said, and she just laughed.
So if he bans all the countries who brings the brain power, how is he going to get the brain power?
You know, they're not making it easier for me to stay here and to work for a company here. That's not at all the message I'm getting. So there's a difference, I think, between the rhetoric and the reality of the policy, as it's at least as it's experienced by the tech workers coming in.
Well, your loss is our gain, at least for now.
That seems to be the story, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Joel.
You're welcome.
Joel Rose, national correspondent with NPR. That was The Big Story. We've got lots more at the website, thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. We are on any podcast app you could possibly want. Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, even Luminary, even the free version of Luminary. If you like us, give us a rating, give us a review. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.